appreciate everybody being here and getting out in the rain and the cold. There's a lot of reasons that you don't have to be here this morning. I'm sure y'all have been through those reasons as you woke up. You know, I went last week. It's raining. I just don't want to. It's cold. It's raining. We go through all these reasons, and you probably know people who have a lot of really good excuses not to go to church, right? When you ask them to come to church, what are those? What's the number one excuse? Got to work. I'm sick. I don't have no money. Y'all don't get that one? My mom, I got a headache. That's a good one. Yeah, I got a headache. You know, they don't even have one. They just tell you, I'm going to have one. I had one. Yeah. It's the only day I have to sleep in. It's boring. I'm tired. My mom used to make me when I was little. You know, does it ever feel like no matter what excuse you take care of, there's always another excuse? Kind of got me to thinking. I was thinking about, you know, how do we take care of all these excuses in church? And the more I got to thinking about it, which only took about 60 seconds, the more I kind of began to realize it didn't really matter how much I sit up here and talk about all the excuses we would have for not going. If you don't want to go, you're not going to go, right? I mean, am I wrong here? Am I wrong? It's all right. It's okay. I really don't think that there's anything we can do for people who don't want to go to church. And I'm kind of thinking that when the church decides that we're going to go through all the motions to try to take care of people's excuses, it's really a waste of time and money. That's just a budget item we shouldn't spend. You know, I mean, you give the preacher a bonus. Tell you a story about 8 years ago. We had a couple that was coming to church. I wasn't here 8 years ago, so obviously this isn't you. We had a couple who was coming to church, and I would see them in between, you know, service and class. I would see them. I'd see them drinking coffee and talking, but I can kind of scan out here, and tomorrow morning or Tuesday, I can pretty much reel off which one of you were here and which one of you weren't here. We have like a big long list. Even visitors, you know, if you've been here once, we have your name. So we know if you've been to church. So there's none of this, you weren't, because I remembered if you were here, and I try to see everybody, at least put my eyes on you and then remember who were there. Well, I see these people, but I didn't know their name. And usually I can remember somebody's name pretty quickly, and I saw them repeatedly, and I thought, man, I'm just not, what is going on? I see them, but I never really get a chance to meet them. So finally, it's happened two or three times, and so after, we weren't that big, you know, this church is 300 and some odd people, English speaking and Spanish speaking, so you got, that's a lot of names to remember. Yeah, like 150, that's nothing, this is a breeze. So I went to him and I said, hey, I haven't seen you, I mean, I see you, but I always just see you in between, I never see you like in church. And they said, well, we never make it for church. It's like going to a restaurant saying, we never make it here to eat. Did you come in to use the bathroom? I mean, like, you know, but the thing is, it's not like you saw him once, and I saw him three or four times, and I said, if you don't come in for church, what do you do? And they said, our kids know some of the kids in Sunday school, and so we just come and bring the kids, and she said, and we just end up just drinking coffee and talking to people. I said, all right. So all these years that the church has spent, you ever get those mail outs at home and it says come as you are, no need to dress up, no dress policy, you know, and all this stuff, or we have coffee, we have donuts, or we have all of those things are just ways to get you not to use an excuse. That's what we've been doing all these years. The church has tried and tried. So here's what we've ended up with. We've ended up with people who will just come and use the services you provide and not do what you wanted them to do. That's what ends up happening. So we've wasted our time and money. Now, I'm not saying that happens. But when I pressed this couple, they said, sometimes we just got so many errands to do, we just drop the kids off. Oh, that's great. So the church just babysits your kids, I guess. If you think this is not happening in America, please think again. This is happening. It even happens here at UNA. You know, we got a place for your kids. We got children's church. Fantastic. You know how hard it is to find a babysitter in Davidson County for an hour? Parents can go to Starbucks, get online. Starbucks just down here. This happens. So I didn't want to talk about dealing with excuses. How does the church, you know, we've been talking about worship for so long. How do we get people to want to come to worship? Let me tell you something. Nobody in here does what you don't want to do. Did I say that right? Nobody does. They don't. I think. You know what I'm saying, though, right? Yeah. And you can say, like, well, I came this morning, but I didn't want to. Then why are you here? Well, I didn't want to. You got up early on a non-work day, put on clothes you probably wouldn't normally wear, put on cologne and perfume that you normally don't put on, added a little bit more to our face that we normally don't add, add a little bit to our height that we normally don't add. The special, we did all these things, and we drove. Some of us drove from Wilson County. Some of us drove from Rutherford County. Some of us drove from Smith Springs Road. You know, some of us drove, 30, 45 minutes. You did all that, but you didn't want to be here. But I had to be here. Who made you be here? Everybody who's in this room this morning wants to be here. It's raining outside, folks. Nobody hates rain more than me. I pray for drought. I mean, 365 days a year. This ain't no secret. If this is a secret to you, you ain't been to church. Yeah, I pray for drought. I pray for heat. So I don't like this. If anybody don't want to be here, I would. If when it's like this, I promise you, I got up this morning and thought to myself. It didn't last long, but I thought, what could I do not to get out in this? Now, I didn't think that very long because I like you people, and I like worship, and I like preaching, and I love Una. So it didn't happen very long, but I can kind of go ahead and think it's easy for people to make an excuse not to go. Everybody in here this morning who's here wants to be here. So if you want to be here, what I thought we would do this morning is not, tell you why you want to be here, but remind you why we come. Not so that, we can say, oh, I'm a good person. No, that's why. But more or less so that we all can understand there's a reason we want to be here. And when we encounter people who have an excuse, it's not the excuse. It's them. And so if we're ever going to invite people to come and try to convince people to come and deal with their excuses, maybe a better strategy is to start showing them why we come. And none of these reasons are because we have to. Because none of you would be here if you didn't want to. If you got your Bibles, let's just stay in Psalm 122. And it's an odd psalm. It's odd to me. I tried to look up some sermons of people who preached this psalm because I was reading it and I liked what it said, but I struck out. Not many people preach this psalm, and I see why. This psalm, if you look at Psalm 122, if you just kind of look up to Psalm 120, this psalm is part of like a series of psalms. It's called the Psalms of Ascent. From Psalm 120 to Psalm 134, each of these 15 psalms begin the same way. Shir Hama'alot, the Psalm of Ascent. So the Psalm of going up. So we got 15 in a little section here. You remember we used to buy CDs and records, and there'd be 15 songs on the, okay. So this is the Psalm of Ascent CD or record. If you don't know what a CD or record is, you're millennial. See me afterwards. But it's supposed to be read as a set. But the thing about these psalms, and I found this highly interesting, these psalms were written to sing on the way to Jerusalem. There are three festivals every year. There's Passover, Pentecost, Tabernacles. We all know this stuff. I want you to just think about this. We're all here on our leisure time. How many weeks vacation do we get? Two? Three? Some of you get like eight or nine. You've been there a long time. What if you had to use your vacation only for church? I mean, where'd you take your vacation? We save up our vacation time. When I was little, we took our vacation to grandparents. My dad got 2 weeks a year, so only 2 weeks we got to see grandparents. You drive up to Centralia, Illinois to, kill a week. My dad used to say, we'll kill a week. I knew what he was saying. You get one Sunday you got to miss, and we got to drive up here to go to this church, that's got five people. They got one bass in the audience and she's horrible at singing. These people would leave work, leave their home, and burn their vacation to go to Jerusalem. Jerusalem's the only place to have church. So you got to take your vacation time to go to church. So if you only get 3 weeks a year and you take it to go to church, do you really think you would do that if you didn't want to? You notice the first line of this psalm? That's why I picked it. The rest of it's kind of difficult. But there's something about this. They said, I rejoice. I was glad with those who said to me, let's go to the house of the Lord. Let's burn our vacation and go to church. Good morning. I love coming here. I want to be here. I rejoice at being here. When I read that line 2 weeks ago, I thought to myself, what does he know that I don't know? What causes this guy to get up and to say to himself, this is what I want to do? I've been counseling single people who are looking for a mate. I tell them, if you want to find a husband or a wife, go to church. That's what I tell them. And I don't want you to think, you know, because that's, you know, that's the mating grounds. You know, that's where you can find. Please don't think that. That's not, hold on a minute. Don't get up and leave yet. There's a reason I said that. You can tell a lot about someone by how they use their leisure time. When I say leisure time, I mean you don't have to go to work. You don't have to go to work. You're not sleeping. You're not working. You're not trying to take care of your yard or anything like that. You have spare time. What do you do in your spare time? Some of us just kill it all on Facebook. Some of us kill it all and we don't know where we killed it at. Some of us try to get the yard work done. Some of us, we have the extra time. Maybe we go fish. Maybe we go hunt. Maybe we play golf. Maybe we go shop. We have leisure time. And so everybody gets to use that however you want. You can tell a lot about a person if they have a little leisure time and they use that time, because I got to tell you, time is more valuable than money to me. Time is valuable. You only get 24 hours of those in a day. You can always get a raise in money. I can't get a raise in time. You ever think about that? So if you've only got this amount of time, if a person chooses to spend an hour or two or three at church, you can tell a lot about a person. So I tell people, if you go to church and you see people going to church, you can tell a lot about them. They've chosen to spend their extra time there. These people who say, I was glad, I was joyful to go to church, what I'd like to do this morning, pretty quickly, is to look at, why are they so glad? Why are they so happy? Because I think it would remind us why we're all here. Surprisingly, I was looking over this, sitting on the pew. I didn't write it as I was sitting on the pew, but I'm looking over as I'm sitting on the pew. And as I scanned it real quick, I thought to myself, these are contrary to what we've always been told to think. Let me show you what I mean. So there's five of these, because three is not enough and five's not too much. Here's the first. I like going to church because when I come here on Sunday mornings at 8:30 and leave at 11 or 12, I like coming to the Unit Church of Christ on Sunday morning and worshiping. I like it. I'm happy to do it because worship in this building with these people provides me structure for my life. I got a lot of changes in my life. Kids change every day. Jobs change. What you eat for dinner changes. Facebook changes. You ever click on something and try to go back to it? Good luck finding that again. It's gone. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, it's gone. I don't know where it went. It's just gone. And you go try to go to that person's page, it's even gone from the page. That's how the world works. It's constantly moving. When you come to church this morning, how many of us knew there was an elder that was going to get up here and welcome everybody? How many of us knew that's how it was going to start? How many of us knew we were going to take communion? It's okay to raise your hand. Some of you didn't know we were going to take communion? We knew what was going to happen, right? We knew we were going to come to church about 9. We're going to get out around 10-ish. Going to go drink some coffee, have some donuts. Some of us are going to leave. But you knew what was going to happen. We're going to sing 5 songs. We're going to have a prayer. Don Webb's going to do communion. You know, normally. This is how it normally works. And I've always heard, you know, we don't want to go to church. It's always the same thing. It's always the same thing. I don't know if it's because I'm getting older. I kind of like knowing I'm going to get the same thing. And it doesn't mean it's boring. It just means I know no matter what changes, I know what to expect when I walk in these doors. And I got to tell you, that's a little comforting to me. Because I get tired of walking in someplace not knowing what to expect. Have you ever walked out of a place because there was just too much drama? Yeah. I got to tell you, not a lot of drama here at Una. You know, if you're looking for drama, this is probably not the place. And the reason is because I'll kick it out. I don't like drama in my church. I don't like all that ruckus. It doesn't mean I like boring. It just means worship seems to provide us with this structure. Look at verse 2 in Psalm 122. It says, "Our feet are standing in your gates, Jerusalem." Jerusalem is built like a city. It's closely compacted together. That is where the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, to praise the name of the Lord according to the statute given to Israel. They always went to Jerusalem. They always did the same thing. Sunday morning church seems to be one of the only things during the week which I have a little bit of normalcy. And so I find that it structures my life. For those of you who come to church every Sunday, what happens when you miss a couple Sundays? Y'all have admitted it to me. You know what happens. All of a sudden, things get out of whack. I just don't feel right. Wonder what that is. It provides a structure. Here's the second one. Church is the place where we can find God. You've always heard, church is not the building, it's the people. I believe that, and that's not a lie. That's absolutely true. The church is the people. But the people gather at a place. We gather together. God always encourages his people to put down some roots because it's the people and the place. You ever notice how much God says it can only be Jerusalem? You got to go to Jerusalem. And in this psalm, where they want to go is the place they've always gone. And it's because the place they've always gone somehow provides them with some kind of, again, normalcy. This is the place we go to find God. It's hard to find God out there. But when you come here, it's like a sigh of relief. Look back at that verse 4, the Message translation, the one Calvin Duncan used to use. It said, instead of, my Bible has, "Praise the name of the Lord according to the statute given to Israel." The Message says, "To give glory to the name of the Lord, that is what it means to be Israel." It's like we find our family name again, you know? This is, when we come to worship, that's what it means to be a church. When we came back for worship, that's what it means. My best friend's mother died this past week, and you know, she was a mother figure in my life, a very large presence in my life. She lived on 5 acres of land, and for all of my teenage years, I cannot think of a single day I was not at her home. Not a single day. I slept there. I ate there. I did other things there. But I can't think of, you know, we almost caught this house on fire. Like, we, you know, we buried the dogs there. So much of my past is there. And I want to read to you a line from one of my favorite songs by Miranda Lambert, and it's not my favorite because of her or anything else. It's just the lyrics are touching. And the song's called "The House That Built Me." And the song is of this woman who goes back home to her childhood home, and there's other people living in there, you know. And the song is about her knocking on the door saying, "Hey, would you mind if I come in a while? I won't take anything. I won't stay long. I just want to come in and because I feel like these memories here can heal me. You know, those handprints on the front steps, well, them are mine. And back there is where we buried my dog. And in that back room, that's where I learned to play guitar. And Daddy built this house that Mama cut out of Better Homes and Gardens. And Daddy built this house with his hands, and he built them out of Mama's dreams." And the song's about finding your place again when you go home. And I want to read you the lines of her chorus, and I've probably mentioned this song before. She says, I thought if I could just touch this place or feel it, that this brokenness inside me might start healing. You out here, it's like I'm someone else. I thought maybe I could find myself. If I could just come in, I swear I'll leave. I won't take anything but a memory from the house that built me. It's this, she's got this drive to go home and to find her again. Church, when we come to church in the morning, we're coming home because we're coming to the house that built us. There are so many of you who've been coming to church at this building for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. How many years, JR? 60 years. 60 exactly. Almost 60 years. Were these pews here when you first started coming? Did you build these pews? Yeah. I mean, JR's been coming here. JR and Shirley have been coming here for, and if you, I mean, he's proud of that. You ask him how long he's been married to Miss Shirley, he's proud of how long he's been married to Miss Shirley. And he'll tell you, I'm also just as proud. This is my home. And I know that no matter what we do here, JR's not going anywhere, I hope. I think it would really take a lot to get the Scotts to leave. And the reason is, this is home. I wonder if those of us who've been here for 40 and 50 years, when we think about Una, we would say, I thought if I could just come back and touch this place at 1917 and feel it, this brokenness inside me might start healing. Now here it's like I'm someone else. I thought maybe I could come to church and find myself. If I could just come in, I swear I'll leave. I won't take nothing but a memory of the house that built me. You know, my whole life I've heard, you know, the building's not the church. Oh, it sure did help though, didn't it? That we came home. I think it's important to find a place, put down some roots, and go to church. When people say, oh, we're church shopping, I think, don't shop long. Find something, put down some roots, buy it, invest, lose. But find a home. Third, when we go home, when we actually come to church, we remember those things that we only do it. We come here and we sing and we pray and we read scripture. And coming to church reminds us of all of those things that God does in our life. Look at verse 5. The writer says, there stands the thrones for judgment, the thrones for the house of God. If you ever want to do a little search, do a search for judgment in the Bible. It's everywhere. Mishpat is the Hebrew word. God's judgment, this is where God's judgment goes out from. And when I go home, when I go to church, I can't fix the hospital. I can't fix mama. I can't fix the kids. I can't fix me. But when I come home, I know that God can work on me. And the writer says, in Jerusalem, at church, that's where the thrones sit. And we come here to get what we needed again. We come here to get that. I'll tell you about my friend. He died. We were at his mother's house trying to go through her stuff, and I walk in the door and it smells just like it did when I was 14 years old. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. All your senses just go on overload, and it's like you get in a DeLorean and go back in time or something, and you're standing where you were 20, 25 years ago. I can see down the hall and I know what's to the left, and so I just walk real slow down the hall and peer in, and it looks exactly like I left it. You know, same shag carpet. It was old when I was there. And it's like you're just trying to look around. But I forgot until I came back, thinking about it later. This woman, she used to punish us by telling us to go pick up sticks. She lived in the woods. There's no limit, you know, how many sticks. And she would say, well, till I've decided you've picked up enough. Because you can't, it's not like you can pick them all up. You know, little sticks is like this too. You know, in the woods it's everywhere. So she would say, you boys need to go pick up sticks. For no reason. She would just tell us for no reason. Just walk in. Y'all need to go pick up sticks. For what? We didn't do nothing. I was 18 years old and she would say, you need to pick up sticks. I'd say, why? She said, because you ain't picked them up in a while. Now, we were telling some friends that, and they said, why didn't y'all leave? And we said, where else are we going to go? Oh, I ain't got no other place. All we got's here. So we just go pick up sticks. And I got smart about it. Every time I pulled up in my car, I'd grab some sticks and throw them in the woods. Because I figured the more I could grab around, because that's, she didn't look, her eyesight wasn't the best. So if I could clear the sticks from the driveway in the immediate path, she wouldn't think there's no sticks in the grass or nothing. So every time I would come over, which is 4 or 5 times a day, I mean, I slept there. I lived there. I would get out of the car, grab a stick, and toss. And it didn't dawn on me until when I left, I remembered when I pulled up, I hadn't been back to this house in 8 or 9 years. But when I pulled up and got out, and my friend got out and put it in park, and I said, hey, and I reached down and grabbed a stick and threw it in the woods. She's dead. Why'd I do that? Because I was home. That's what you do at home. You do home stuff at home. And it dawned on me when I start to read, that's where the thrones are. What he's saying is that's where home is. That's where we do home stuff. And when you do home stuff, somehow you take it with you. When I got back to my house, I live in the woods now. When I got back to my house and shut the door, instinctively I looked down and grabbed a stick and threw it into the woods. Because I knew any stick I pick up now, I ain't got to pick it up later. Where did I get that from? Home. But I hadn't done that at my own house ever until I left home to go home. You see, when we go to church, it reminds us to do home stuff when we leave. That's what it is. That's where we get judgment. Two more. I go to church because it gives me the peace and the security I need for my life. You know how many psalms you read where the writer says the flood waters are engulfing me? It's up to my neck. I almost drown. In this psalm, verse 6, he says, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May those who love you be secure. May there be peace within your walls and security within your citadels. I never saw this before this week, but in verse 6, that line, pray for the peace, that's not the church word for pray. That's not the Hebrew worship word. They have a word for pray. You know, prayer. You know, supplication. Officially ask God for something. This is the common everyday word for ask. It's not a church word. It's not a religious word. It's like, go ask for a second helping of green beans. Go ask somebody for directions. Just go ask them. And they're so used to doing church things that now they've just started doing regular things, and they're so comfortable going to church that there's this peace. And when we leave, we still pray for the peace at church. How many of us talk about church when we're not here? And I would say a lot of us. We've talked to somebody about where we went to church and how service was and how bad the sermon was and you know, what songs we sang and the people we saw. But I'd like to get us to a place to where when we come to church, we also talk to people here about everyday stuff. Somebody, I really think we're getting it wrong in churches in America. Somebody was saying that when you come to church, they were talking about their small groups. And they said, I quit going to small group. I said, what for? He said, well, he said, because I would go to small group and all we talk about is the NFL. And I thought to myself, that's an excuse. I mean, I guess it's a good excuse. What was so bad about that? What was so bad about that? Now, we need to be doing Bible things. And I said, so instead of going to small group, you're staying home reading your Bible. He just stared at me. Yeah? Any excuse will do, I guess. What's so bad about doing everyday things with those we go to church with? That's so bad. You can only do church things with church people and everyday things with everyday people? I'd like to see our church language kind of shift over into everyday language as well. Because I think somehow when I can take all of you with me when I leave the house that built me, I think that what happens is that I get peace during my week too. Some of us just come to church and leave everything here. No, take that with you. Just take it with you. It's okay. At my friend's house, she always drank Big K. Some of y'all don't know what that is. I don't even know where we get that anymore. It's like fake Coke. I mean, Brooks accuses me of being cheap on the Coke, but it's like Sam's Choice or something. You know, what's Big K? And it's like, it's not even Big K. It's even worse. It was like Big K Green Lightning Diet. What is that? Is that Sprite or Mellow Yellow? Is that the generic Sprite? And it was like greenish, and I don't know what that is. But every time we would leave, she would say, "Take a drink with you. Just take a drink with you." And I would go in there and stare at all these Big K's. This is horrible. They all taste the same. And I would go back in there and I'd say, "Miss Betsy, when are we gonna get some real Coke?" And she said, "When are you gonna make some real money? Or when are you gonna pay for some real rent in a real house?" So I was just asking a question. We were leaving the house to go to the burial site, and every time I would leave, I would go in there and grab a drink, you know, because it's free when you're a teenager. You know, I want to spend my money on other stuff. And we were leaving, and both of us stopped and said, "Let's go get a drink." You know, like normal, open it up. Guess what's in the fridge? Big K. Diet Dr. Lightning or something. You know what that is? And we both reached in, and I drank it. I tell you, that's the best drink I ever drank in my life. That big K I drank the other day, because I went home and drank it. It's amazing what things taste like when you go home. They didn't taste so bad anymore, do they? Because we start to take home with us. We remember why this is so important. Let me give you the last one. I go to church on Sunday morning at the Unit Church of Christ because it actually allows me to sharpen my tools. You know, you don't sharpen your stuff, life starts to get harder. We don't just get disoriented when we don't go to church. We're not as sharp. I got a friend who brags. He brags that it takes him two. He always says this. I had to cut the grass, and then we'll all say it to him in unison. And it took you 2.5 hours. That's what we say. Because he always has to put the, I don't know if he wants credit or it took you two. Dude, hire a lawn guy. Seriously. It took you 2.5 hours. He's still like with a walk behind Murray. Like, just buy another mower. I mean, seriously. Nobody cares how long it took you. But he says that so much, we all know. So I saw him, you know, during this whole funeral process. And we got to talking about nonsense, because sometimes you just start talking about things to come up with something to say. And we were talking about cutting grass. And I said, about time to start, my son, I hope, start cutting my grass. And he said, already started. And then we all went, let me guess, took you 2.5 hours. He said, nope, took me 4 hours. Oh, no. He got a slower mower. Oh, no. And I said, why did it take you so long? He said, I had to sharpen the blades. Well, then it didn't take you 4 hours because you had to sharpen the blades. He said, no, but I started mowing, then I had to sharpen the blades, and then I finished mowing, so it took like 4 hours. I said, I know, but it didn't take you 4 hours to cut the grass. It took you an hour and a half. I mean, it took you 2.5, and then it took you, an hour and a half to sharpen it. And he said, it's all part of the process. Now, just hold on a sec. He included the sharpening in his mowing time. Did y'all catch that? It took me 4 hours to cut grass. And some of that time needs to be sharpening my blades. It's all part of cutting grass. There are a lot of us that are putting too much importance on, I only want to do the things I can get some value out of. I only want to do some things I can recoup my time. I can recoup my investment. There's no good reason I should do that. How much does that cost? I don't want to do it because it's not worth the money or not worth my time. And so we only do what we can get something out of. The problem is we never stop to sharpen our blade. We never stop. And sometimes you just need to stop. You're not going to make any money. You're not going to make any friends. You're not going to make the time back. You lost the time. You just lost it. But it's good to sharpen the blade. Because I have found that when you don't sharpen the blade, 2.5 hours really starts to take 4 hours. Because you never stopped to sharpen. Y'all ever shave with an old razor? I know that's a really dumb question. Like, of course we have. You ever notice how long it takes? And you don't really notice it, do you? You're just shaving. Maybe some of you don't shave. I don't know. I do. But I never notice it until I get a new blade and I think, man, I should have replaced this days ago, weeks ago, months ago. Right? But it's just like slowly, slowly things started to get dull and we think, what happened? What happened? Why didn't I get this? Because it got dull and you didn't stop. That's what church does. Church allows us, Sunday morning church allows us to come together and sharpen our blades. In verse 9, the writer says, for the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your prosperity. For the sake of my family, for the sake of my sanity, I need to come to 1917 Old Murfreesboro Pike and worship God at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning. If for nothing else, that it sharpens my blade. And it makes me a little less angry when I leave. A lot of us are angry when we come, and somehow we're not as angry when we leave. And what I'd like for us to do is to think about these things during the week so that we're able to have a better week. I'd like for us to take church with us. The reasons you're here today, because you want to be here, whether you think you did or not, you're here in the rain, in the cold. You wanted to be here. You could have done a lot of things, and we wouldn't have known. And you could have told us, you know, you had the flu. We wouldn't know. But you came because you wanted to be here. What I'd like for you to do is to remember why you're here, and remember that on Thursday. What I'd like for you to do on Thursday is to think of home and be glad and rejoice that you get to go back home in a few days. I've done a lot of funerals. Yesterday's funeral was probably the best I have ever done. Not like the best, it was. I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, I did a good job at the funeral, but it was the best I had ever seen. It's not coming out good. It's a weird funeral. She got buried at Larkspur. I don't know if y'all know where that is. It's a conservation in Bethpage. I told some people this last Wednesday. In Larkspur, you can't be embalmed. You can't have a vault. Can't have a regular casket. You can't use plastic flowers. The body is allowed to feed and nourish and preserve God's land. It's a 112-acre, beautiful place. You can have a homemade casket that's going to disintegrate pretty quickly, or you can be buried in a burial shroud. Luckily for us, she had a casket. The burial shroud was a little weird. But she's been dead since Sunday last week. Just buried her yesterday. And where we buried her, we got to drive 45. I want to stop here. I want us to think about, what's the last burial you attended? How long did it last? How long was the burial service? Some of us went to the mausoleum, you know, they had the burial inside. Some of us went outside. Some of us go to a burial after the funeral, and we go out there. The hole's already dug, a perfect 6 feet, perfect. You know, it's like they took a cookie cutter, you know, and set it down in there, and they've got it all off. And then there's the normal workers who are there waiting for you to leave as they finish their cigarettes so that you can hurry up and go, so they can go ahead and cover up your loved one. And they have the fake grass, we had the fake grass we can all stand on, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. The family thanks you for coming, and you're all free to go. And most of us leave while the hole's still there and the body hasn't even been put in. Or maybe the body's been put in, but the workers, they'll cover it up. And I'm just like you. I mean, when I go to the burial, and you know, we've already done the funeral, that we're all emotional, and we get there, and first thing I'm doing is this. Especially if it's cold and wet. Now, we got a tent somewhere, I hope. And I say the words, and we say the prayer, and we go home. Now, if you're military, obviously, not so much. If you're a cop, metro, not so much. I think we have lost something in the death experience. And I don't mean we won't experience death, but I think we just try to rush through things so we can get on with our life. What would happen if we just spent 2.5 hours at the burial? Oh, I hope not. And yet, that's exactly what happened to me yesterday. We trekked up a quarter mile uphill both ways. Like a steep incline, like walking like this through the mud to get to this spot in this 112-acre, this random spot where her casket is. And we get there, and we just sit in silence. And then I read a scripture, and we sit in silence, and daughter's crying, and my best friend's crying, and I'm crying. And then a lady comes up, and she says, could I sing the Lord's Prayer? And y'all know me. I don't like anything out of order. You know, if you've asked me, can I? No. Like, no. Did you write it down? Did I already know about it? No. Did you tell Karen? No. Did you ask the elders? No. No. No, 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 no. She said, could I? And I had the coming out. Can I? And she said, can I sing the Lord? I don't know who this woman is. Is she Church of Christ? Is she cleared? You know, I don't know. She said, can I sing the Lord's Prayer? And I said, ask the daughter. And she came up, I don't know who she is. And she said, could I sing the Lord's Prayer? And she said, yes. And the lady just sang the Lord's Prayer. It's a version I've never heard of before. She just sang. She struggled to get through it. And we just listened and cried. And then I read a poem. And then the man looked to all of us and he said, who are the pallbearers? So the sons picked up Mama and we lowered her in, not on a crank. And this wasn't 6 feet deep, by the way. And we placed her in. And then they brought out 9 shovels. And there were little bitty shovels too for the grandkids. And he said, whoever would like to participate, you're free. So we all joined in, and he passed out little flowers for us to put on Mama's grave. So we all placed them in there in her casket. And I'm not saying, you know, we all got to do this. I'm just saying, I think we're missing something. Because yesterday when I looked around, no one was on their phone. No one was checking Facebook. No one was talking to each other about where we're going to go eat or what we're going to do. No one was looking at their watch. Not because it would have been disrespectful. We never even thought about it. For 2.5, when I pulled my phone, I had like texts, missed calls, email. I mean, all these things. I never even thought about it. How does that happen? You go 2.5 hours at a burial and don't think about it. We ascended that hill because we wanted to be there. Because we were going home. We were going to bury Mama. And we were there, and everything we did was out of respect for her. And Kim had the greatest line when we got home last night. She said, it's as if we buried the day. We buried the day, and it stuck with me for the last few hours. We did. We buried it all yesterday. And when the grandkids got done, we had to put on the topsoil. And I looked to my best friend, I looked to my two other friends, and I said, let's finish this. So we all grabbed our shovels and finished it. And then we placed fresh flowers on Mama's grave. We sat for a while, and then we made the 1/4 mile trek down the hill. While we're burying her, because remember, she always made us pick up sticks. She'd always say, you know, I'll pay you for it. She didn't pay me for that. I never got my money. And as we're shoveling dirt, I looked to my friend. I said, you think she's going to pay us for this? He said, no, probably not. He said, but what else is new? And as my best friend was off to the side in mourning, grieving, he just couldn't swing the shovel anymore on his own mother. And he sat there crying. And he said, and just like old times, Daniel's over here watching us do all the work. But we can say those kinds of things because we were home. We can say those kinds of things because of where we were. Church, this morning, you're home. You're home. We've come home. You can say what you want. You can have the feelings you want. When you leave, you can have the day you want because you came home. Everybody that's here today, you're here because you want to be here. The invitation is to find those who aren't home and bring them home. Show them, share with them why going home is so good. Why going home is such a blessing in your life. You're here because you want to be here. Who do you know that didn't want to be here? Maybe it's time for them to come home. Maybe it's time for you to come back home. Let's finish our ascent this morning as we stand and sing.